let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be
with us is Huda. Can you hear us?
Hey.
Yay. Yes. Okay, a little bumpy at the beginning, but we'll get things. So I tried to actually upload and play some Frank Ocean, but that didn't kind of work out. So this is Radio Regent. We love it. It's Gorilla Radio. So
that's how it moves.
But we're all here together, even though it's on phone. Huda, I haven't seen or talked to you in a while. You've been you just came back from a trip.
Sorry, I can't even hear you guys clearly.
Can you hear
us? Oh, we were
now?
Saying that we hadn't seen or heard you in a minute, and so we were wondering like what you've been up to. We heard that maybe you had spent some time traveling.
But I heard a part of that. So
okay. So let me try to boost her. It's just the whole figuring out the line. Can you hear? Okay. Can you hear me at least? Are you there, Huda?
Hello?
Hey. Oh. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Yes. So I was just saying we haven't seen you in a while, and I kind of saw online that you went on a trip.
Now it's mumbling a little bit, but I heard trip.
You went away to New York.
Okay.
Tell us about your travels.
I just recently came back from New York. I went down there with Milka, who's part of the Africana, and a couple of friends. And we just went down for fun, really, but it was really good. It was nice to be in Brooklyn, surrounded by melanin.
Mm-hmm.
That was burning hot. It was really, really nice. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. So for listeners just tuning in, you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, and this is Black Feminism Live, and I'm Molly, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
I'm Kim Crosby.
And on the phone?
Huda Hassan.
Nice. So I guess we'll go right into it. What we kind of wanted to touch on was Frank Ocean came out. Well, he just released his first album called Channel Orange.
Yes.
And just before the release, he kind of did this beautiful Tumblr blog entry. I don't know. Do you guys want to start and talk about it?
I think also, like, in addition to coming out as queer or as bi or however, he chooses to name that, he also came out as being, brokenhearted and vulnerable, right? Which, for me, also, I think that challenges a lot of the spaces that we give Black men to occupy, especially in mainstream hip-hop, but also just in general. Like, I cannot think of a lot of intentional spaces that are created where Black men can be vulnerable or heartbroken. Maybe, like, in the early 90s, you could be Boyz II Men, you know? But, like, they really have restricted the ways in which our Black men can be really open and sad. I was like, your heart, your little heart.
I know. And I guess, what did you think about the reaction?
I think it was like an interesting kind of back and forth for me. Like, I always, I think really deeply about when you're a public figure and the demands of people asking you to be a role model, which, you know, makes sense on some levels because you're very visible. So they're like, you're very visible, do something important and responsible with that visibility. But at the same time, I really believe that it's important that communities are equally as responsible to their public figures. So, you know, I think that we have a responsibility to make sure to still be really supportive and to support Frank Ocean in doing that if he is taking on that role. So I did definitely see people on Twitter like holding him down and like responding to a lot of really bigoted bullshit. And having like 4 or 5 hour conversations over Twitter, just being like, this doesn't make any sense. Do you really like his music? What does it matter? Like, and so I think that that has to be a part of it, because coming out doesn't necessarily make your life any easier or better, and often it can do entirely the opposite. And so if we are asking, or I feel like, you know, in the same week, Queen Latifah performed at a Pride event, and she released like another statement saying that like she's not gay just because she performs at this event, you know, and we have to think about what's making her go so hard in the paint about having to deny her sexuality, when I'm like, one, you know, we could say we already know, but also, you know, does it totally matter entirely? And I think it's both of those things, that it does matter, that as a young queer girl growing up, I didn't see representations that looked like me, and it was really hard for me to feel like I was allowed to exist and be a gay girl, a gay black girl, because everybody had like a lesbian haircut and was white, and like I was like, I don't look like any of these things at all. So the first times I saw like queer women or queer folks that were black who were celebrities, I was like, shit, son, like I'm real, like there's a mirror that actually reflects back to me of what I could be or what I could look like. So that's so valuable, right? Especially in spaces where, I don't know, you're like in the rural places in Ontario. Like,
that's an actual interesting comparison, because I really think, you know, like it is sort of opening up space, because if you look at like the Queen Latifah generation, and now that Frank Ocean is just kind of getting into the scene. I mean, he's been there for a while, but this is his first album. What do you think has changed?
I don't know. Huda, do you want to take this? Or?
Sorry, what was the first, what do you think has changed in terms of his music? Or?
No, in the sort of climate where, you know, Queen Latifah is sort of in, wants to like deny or like confirm that she's straight. And then, you know, Frank Ocean, who's openly coming out. So I'm just saying, is it a generational thing? Or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just wondering if there's sort of been sort of a shift, and, you know, it would be a good shift kind of thing.
I feel like there has been for pop culture in America. Like, just recently you had the president of the United States basically in a more of a political manner say that, yes, I am for LGBT rights, or I'm for gay rights. And there are a lot of celebrities out there who are pretty open about their sexuality, and there are individuals as well. I find this is more amongst like white Hollywood more than anything, in my opinion. But you do also have artists or celebrities out there like Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt who refuse to get married even though they're in a heterosexual relationship, because they think that they shouldn't celebrate their rights to get married before others have that right to get married. So I think right now it's like a bit of a easier time than it was like 10, 15 years ago in pop culture in America.
Yeah. I think also like, okay, so maybe I would also add that this past week, Diana King came out, and she's a Jamaican singer. She sings Shy Guy, you know, like, I don't want, that song was the truth. That song was the truth, the light, and the way. I love Diana King so much. And she wrote this like really beautiful letter that was like, I'm a mother, I'm a this, I'm a this, and I'm a lesbian. You know, also in this past month, we had like the NAACP come out and be like, we are also in solidarity for LGBT rights. And for me, there's maybe a couple of things that are happening. One, I do think that like young people are coming out way earlier. Or maybe, and there's more space for them to do that. Like, I meet 14-year-olds who are where I was when I was, like, 20, like, in terms of their ability to talk about themselves and even just, like, their swag, right? Like, their whole like, visual situation is just in a whole other level. And I think that has a lot to do with, like, access to media and culture in really young. Like, I remember being, like, 12, the things I had access to were, like, Barbies, like, I wasn't on Tumblr, but 12-year-olds are absolutely on Tumblr, and they're having conversations about sexuality across, like, hundreds of miles. So that is completely changing access to culture and the way that people can talk about it. But I also, and, like, what I was writing about on Facebook is, like, I want to challenge the idea that continually gets perpetuated and attached to blackness that we're so homophobic. You know, that we have never, you know, you were just playing Ozzie Davis, and he has been such a champion for LGBT rights for most of his, like, the latter part of his life, you know, like, and that has been happening. Coretta Scott King also, like, she was Martin Luther King's, one of his primary, like, speech writer advisor dudes was a gay man, you know, like, it's really challenging for me the erasure of LGBT black folks and also LGBT like allies in the black community, because that's been happening from time. So like it's so interesting to me that, you know, when like a white person commits a crime, it's about him being perverse, but when black people commit a crime, it's because all black people are violent. And a similar thing happens with homophobia, where it's like when a white person is homophobic, they're just a crazy bigoted white person, but when black people are homophobic, it's endemic of like blackness being against queerness.
Yes. Yeah. That's so true.
I also wanted to point this out earlier when we were talking about the support with Frank Ocean. Two things I noticed on Twitter, because as soon as he came out and as soon as I read... can you guys hear me fine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. As soon as I read the letter, I like Kim said, I personally took it as a letter about heartbreak and love, and even though it was about sexuality and his sexuality being fluid and whatnot, it was absolutely the most beautiful letter I've ever read. And I was on Twitter for like the next 48 hours stalking the hell out of Twitter tags with Frank Ocean and his handle and whatever, just to see the response from his fans. And I noticed a lot of support from fans and celebrities who were fans as well, who were making a connection between Independence Day for America and Frank Ocean. And they're calling it, they're like officializing it as like Frank Ocean Day for them, just because he had done, like, in their eyes, made a heroic step, I guess. But I also noticed something that was really interesting to me as a hip-hop fan, and also sort of following Odd Future, even though I have a lot of problems with the collective, particularly Tyler, the Creator, who tends to be very harmful with his lyrics towards black women and the black woman's body, and very, very homophobic in his lyrics. Him and another member of Odd Future, which Frank Ocean is part of, named Taco, tweeted about how much they support him, and basically one of them made a tweet saying, black, white, gay, straight, I still love him, and Tyler, the Creator, saying whatever he identifies as, like, I still support you, and I'm glad you finally came out. Just the support from rappers who have this homophobic content, so like a heavy homophobic content in music, coming out and saying like we love you regardless, and showing their support and embracing him for who he is, and setting an example for many of for their fan base, who I'm assuming might have homophobic views if they follow these guys, and they're fine with some of the uncomforting things that they say.
Yeah,
it was shocking and it was interesting. Something I've personally never seen before from many rappers in hip-hop.
There's this awesome, life-changing video where Busta Rhymes goes in about how much respect he has for Frank Ocean and how much he loves his music. And this is Busta Rhymes who, like, I don't know, 8 years back was in that Beyond Beats and Rhymes documentary being like, I'm not going to talk about that homo shit. Like, that's not my thing. Like, that's not hip-hop. That's not me. And he was just like, I love Frank Ocean. I respect his music. He can do whatever he wants to do. God bless him. Like, he just was with the most love I've ever, ever, ever seen.
To add to that, it's like interesting how, figures, get kind of labeled, and you don't see their sort of growth or like their artistic growth.
Exactly.
So if they say something when they're young or, you know what I mean, just mm-hmm. growing, they're that way for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And you only see this like within the black, like, you know, with black figures, like, for example, Buju and all this stuff. And there's never a sort of like a continuum of, you know, their thought or their artistic, you know, development and, you know, their growth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If they say one thing, they, you know, are labeled that forever.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Exactly.
Was it like, who was it that, a while ago made like a very made a comment about like women and like feeling entitled to their body. I think it was Too Short, and then like Dream Hampton checked him on his shit, and then he was like, "You're right, I'm sorry." And the "you're right, I'm sorry" part was
never
completely eclipsed from the news.
Yeah.
But the like, "Oh, black people hate women, black men are really misogynist," like that was absolutely what's news. And so I always want to challenge people to think about the ways in which those things are constructed, because it's on purpose. Like, it's on purpose that we construct this narrative that black people, black men hate black women. Right? And that
you're sorry, your call did not go through.
Bye,
please
Huda.
Hang up.
Bye.
Call
we'll miss you.
This is a recording.
That black men hate black women, and that black people in general cannot be LGBT and cannot be LGBT allies. When in fact I think it's just so much more complicated than that. And for me, I also think I think that people oppress each other with what they have access to. You know, and I think that if white folks own institutions, i.e. like the government and healthcare and immigration systems, and
yeah.
White folks are the Minister of Indian Affairs, you know, like they're going to use those institutions in order to exact systemic violence on populations of people. So I experience homophobia from white folks most directly through those institutions, you know,
mm-hmm.
but with black folks and communities of color who are not at the helms of these institutions, we're experiencing those things directly. And it looks a little bit different. It looks like more like physical violence. It looks like more physical altercations. But I think that we don't do it justice when we make the assumption that it's just like black folks in general just can't get their shit together and be respectful of LGBT people, and ignoring the fact that like black folks are queer, like I'm here. Like, it makes me so angry when people talk about that, because it completely erases the right of like to exist of all LGBT people.
It's like double erasure kind of thing.
Erasure
and erasure and
mm-hmm.
erasure
mm-hmm.
and we still keep coming back. No, we're still here.
And I think it again, it like perpetuates this idea that queerness and LGBT culture exists with white communities,
mm-hmm.
And then everything else exists with, or like, and then at the opposition to black communities. So, you know, I hear other young people saying this too, where they're like, oh, you know, I can only be gay around my white friends, but then it's really like racist, and so I have to like make sure that I'm around black people too, but I can't be gay. But again, I think it's not to erase that experience at all, because that's true. Like, it's absolutely true. And we do need to have a conversation about, like, the ways that misogyny get played out in black communities and the ways that homophobia gets played out in black communities. And I think that we don't often like to talk about lateral violence, you know, because we're nervous about what that means and what that looks like when it plays out. But I don't think that that conversation comes from a place that there is, like, a black monolith and there's, like, one specific way that we do that.
Yeah. So you haven't been in the studio for a while, so and we haven't had a conversation in a while. So what's new with all the stuff and fabulous stuff that you're doing?
Oh wow. Okay. Thanks for asking. I feel like you have to do that too, right? After?
Yeah.
Because I want to. I want to hear. What's been going on? Well, I'm kind of working on an event with a group of really, really brilliant people. And it's around decolonizing stories. And sort of the way that this event kind of sprang into being, so I'm gonna trigger warning because this is a really intense story. So Jamila, who's my housemate, who's also from Abstract Random. She got this book when she was on tour in Europe, and it's a story, it's a book of collection of Black revolutionary stories. I think they're all by Black women, I'm pretty sure. And she was reading me the story, she was telling me about the story where this white family, this white woman, was at home, and she came home to find her husband and her son who just came back from a lynching and had brought a toe with them. And I was like, what? And she was so, you know, disgusted and appalled. And, you know, and for me, that was also a reminder, like, right, there were white folks who thought that slavery was fucked up too, right? Which is always interesting for me to think about. But she was so uncomfortable by what happened that, you know, her first thought was like, I need to kill my husband and I need to kill my son. What am I going to do about that? But then she realized that that wasn't a possibility and she wouldn't do that. So she went upstairs and she took her baby girl's life and then her own life.
Oh my gosh.
So Jamila was telling me the story and I was like, wow, you know, one thing I have to remark is that I never got to actually hear about what happened in slavery. I got to hear that slavery happened, but not like what are the nuances of the stories. And it was happening for hundreds of years, and we don't ever get to hear about like what happened over those hundreds of years. We get to hear like when this plantation opened up or when these islands were colonized, but never do we get to hear, like the actual told stories of the things that were happening during slavery, but rather we only get to hear this like very limited like glossing over of that whole experience. And so I was thinking, you know, in terms of thinking about what decolonization looks like, and for me decolonization looks like challenging normative ideas of what history looked like, what our responses to history looks like, what complacency looks like, what apathy looks like. And I was thinking it would be amazing to get a group of people together and tell the stories that have been passed down to them. So not their own stories, but stories that they've heard from elders, stories that they've heard in their own communities and their own cultures, that illuminate some of like the complexities and the challenges of colonization and decolonization and what it looks like, what our responses look like to it, regardless of how perfect or imperfect they are. Because I'm sure a lot of people took their lives or took others' lives in response to these kinds of systems. It happens all the time, you know, like in our communities, and we can and we should talk about the kinds of like gun violence that's been happening in our communities and what the effects of colonization are on our psyche in leading people to think that their lives are so disposable. Like there's so many things to think about. And so inviting a group of people together to share stories on decolonization. So people from all over the world who are like, there's folks from Egypt and Sri Lanka and just some really cool people who are going to be sharing those stories coming up in the next couple of weeks. So that's something I may be really excited to work on also because I think it's an important process for like healing and thinking about strategy, right? Like I feel like as communities, we don't come together and talk strategy. Like what do we do next? So the government sucks. So what happens? Or it happens in our smaller kind of like community spaces, but what does it look like when many different communities come together and talk about how our liberation is really wrapped up in each other and what it would look like for us to be intentional in terms of like thinking about our actions in relation to each other.
Strategize around actions through, yeah, I guess healing through strategy. I don't know, that's a lot of where I think that we have to get back to is actually strategizing and having goals. You know, we have goals in our, why wouldn't we have goals for movements? You
exactly.
Know? So yeah, that's really important work. So when does that begin?
Well, we were actually like hoping to have it on the 28th. But it's also Shy Wisdom's CD launch for Love Speak. So I was like, I don't want to like squish on her because, you know.
You could plug that.
Because everyone should do that, right? Like everyone should go to Shy Wisdom's CD launch, Love Speak.
Where is it again? Revival, I think?
Yeah, it's at the Revival. And she, if you don't know, like you need to know, she has like an enormous, powerful voice. I was really lucky to share a stage with her once years and years and years ago. And her voice is just grown. in that short period of time. And so it's amazing to see the kind of success that she's experiencing, you know, because I feel like Toronto isn't very good to its artists, right?
Yes. yeah, that kind of leads into what I've been up to. I've been kind of following LOL. I went to Detroit with them, and I was actually with them last night. They're at Harbor. They played at Harborfront. It was really interesting night. It was like they played at Harborfront, and then went to this actual really cool festival. It's a first time festival. It's independent, meaning no sponsorship by banks.
Woo.
Never happens in this city anymore. But it's like this electronic music festival that was started by these group of people. And yeah, so I kind of went from Harborfront to this art gallery on Richmond and Spadina area. And it was really, really cool. So I actually will get the exact name, so people should check it out. It's this weekend. But Toronto and their artists.
Your face is awesome about it. There's like a couple of times where I wish I could show listeners like your response.
It's like, yeah, I could. Yeah, I don't know where to even start with that, but. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting, like, speaking to, like, the artists that I met last night experiences of artists going abroad. And then just, like, because Lal was just in Germany, and she's like, you know, Rosina, she was just like, in Germany, like, you make art, and people are like, that's great. They don't ask me how much I'm making, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's just like, you're an artist, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's where I kind of want the art, you know, making here to happen. Like, yeah. It has intrinsically, like, has value, right? So, and thing, like, a lot of things that artists have to do in this city is kind of insane, you know.
Do you want to like talk about some of the challenges that you personally have in your art practice as like a filmmaker in the city? Like, I feel like you could go in, like, I think we could both go in, but I think that it's important to kind of name some of the challenges that
there's a lot of challenges. I mean, I think it also has to do with the type of art that I make. So I think there's a more of a struggle for me, because there's stories that, you know, you're not going to get paid for.
Right.
So it's kind of balancing, and then sort of like, you know, figuring out a way of still getting income, and how do you do that, when, you know, you have to go full time on the stuff that you're not going to get paid on. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, the constant pull in, like, of trying to sort of make a living. Going back and forth, oh, I need to get a job, and getting paid, really.
I hear all of those things. I think it's for me, I think that, you know, thinking about Black feminism when I think about my like art practice, that I've watched like white men performers, like performance artists, like go into a room and like throw up in a bucket and then make $10,000, you know? And like I feel all sorts of ways about like art for art's sake. You know, I think that everyone should be able to have some space to be creative. I think that's deeply important. But it's really frustrating for me when, you know, you're telling a story about an important community, or you're creating a space to like talk about something that's significant and relevant to like a whole bunch of people who don't ever get to see themselves represented, but like white dudes who get to see themselves represented all the time can engage in these like highly narcissistic art practices and get paid like so much money to do it, you know? I was walking past the Art Gallery of Ontario yesterday and looking at the Picasso whole situation that's up, and they're like, genius, blah blah blah, sculptor, everything. And I'm like, do you want to talk about how he like appropriated all of his art practice from East Africa, and then all of East African art is reduced to like handicrafts, but he gets to be like a genius sculptor, like brilliant man of everything, and like we're gonna look at mad pictures of him and his work. Like, I can't actually get down with that, because I feel like, again, we're told like there's not money for that story, like nobody's gonna want to invest in that story, but like, why are people investing in, you know, someone wearing like a giant meat suit? Like, I don't, like, I can't.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, yeah, and that's another thing. It's like, you know, sort of building sort of your own market or, you know, audience outside of sort of the mainstream, right? So it's like having to do like multiple things and multiple jobs and staying sane.
Yeah.
And not going crazy.
And also, and
I have breaks, like, you know, and I like, you know, tell the world on Twitter.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm losing it officially. Because I also think that, you know, people are particularly hard on I was at a workshop with another like black filmmaker, and she was saying how every time she makes a film that people are asking her to like represent the black community like perfectly and fully. Like every single time, you know, like she'll have a film and it'll be about like single moms, and they'll be like, but what about women who have partners? And they're like, yeah, that's cool, but that's not the story I'm telling right now. Like, stay with me. And I feel like that's also something that we do to our black artists, that we really require them to give like the most full and perfect picture of blackness, like possible, in order for us to not levy like a ton of critique on them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we're hard on our own kind of thing.
Yeah, in a way that I think is complete. Like, I feel like I was someone who was raised by community, and I feel like community holds me accountable all the time. When I talk shit, they're like, that shit, right? And yeah. I appreciate that so deeply. But I also am like, are you holding, I don't know, Katy Perry as accountable for, like, the whack shit that comes out of her mouth as you are, like, policing each and every other artist for like the things that they do, you know?
Right, yeah.
Or I often think about the way that like rap music also gets like described as being homophobic or misogynist or terrible. And like, if you're a feminist, you can't like rap music. Like, meanwhile, can we talk about country? Like, can we talk about the way that like white punk music looks? Can we talk about the way that white rock music looks as being like hella misogynist, right? But again, I think it's like, we are constantly forced to uphold this idea of a monolith and then be responsible for it, as opposed to being able to say, like, I am one black person.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make my art. And, you know, like, I think, like, we get held accountable for, like, Soulja Boy. Like, he's an idiot. I'm not advocating for himself, you know? Like, like, you need to hold him accountable for the ridiculous lyrics that comes out of his mouth, as well as hold, like, Viacom responsible for only funding artists like that.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, see, look, you have Soulja Boy, so that means that all of the music that comes out of this genre is therefore less valuable.
Yeah, yeah. I think also, like, as a filmmaker, you're constantly having to say, okay, well, people want to watch this. But also, because I'm, you know, going to be making this Haiti film for the rest of my life. But what I get asked is, like, are you Haitian? I was like, no, I'm not Haitian. But would you ask that to a white filmmaker?
No.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
not even once. Not even one time. Not even one time ever. George Lucas makes a film about black pilot. Are you a black pilot? No. Nobody's going to ask him that, you know? Like, Steven Spielberg makes a movie about everything. Makes movies about everything. And it's completely and totally
so
okay.
You get pigeonholed that you have to make a certain type of film, right? So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Right now I'm like, I'll just like just keep moving, I guess. But yeah, I was really, really, really tired this week, so we'll see what goes.
Do you feel like you go back and forth? I feel like I go back and forth about being like, I need a job. Yeah, like an adult job.
Yeah. I'm like, how old am I? I'm still a kid. Like, like, it's just like, why don't I just grow up?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then you send out, like, and, you know, do the whole resume thing, and you're like, oh, nobody's calling me back. And then I'm like, oh, but who wants to hire me anyway? Like, because, you know, like.
Right. What do I do that people want to, you're not very good at sitting in one place and following directions and, like, paying attention to authority, you know, like.
I'm just not good at that. So I'm just like, oh, that's not going to work. How else am I going to make income? We'll see. I'm like, maybe I'll go to school. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel it's so interesting. I feel like there are kinds of those like normative kind of like roots that I think that, you know, Black folks really started to push in their communities post the 60s of like, if you go to university, you'll get a job. And then like now having that conversation with my parents, like, that's not true. It might have been true for a period of time, and I'm not denying the fact that it might have been true for a period of time, but it is not true anymore that you go to university and you'll get a job, or that you'll get a job that you want, or anything like that. And then for me, I think I met this woman, and she worked for this company, this bank, for 27 years, and then they laid her off. And that was it. Like, there was no severance, there was no nothing. They were just like, goodbye. And then she recently reapplied for a job at the same bank, and they didn't give her any seniority, they didn't give her any special perks. She had to like start over, like entry level, like everyone else. And, you know, I think that for me, it's a reminder of like, often regular adult jobs, and I'm using like heavy quotation bunny marks about it, are purported as being like stable. Right? Like, they're purported as being like, that is what you do if you want to take care of yourself. And don't be an artist because you never know when you're going to get paid. And like, it's true. You're like, I don't know when someone's going to pay me, but I really hope it's soon because I need that check. Thanks so much. Smiley face at the end of the email. But the kind of stability that I think that you're afforded when you get like a 9-to-5 job is also something that can be like pulled out from underneath you. And like, you learn that your whole life, and then what do? I feel like at least I've learned how to be like hella flexible, right? Yeah. Like, I've learned how to like coast through on like that imaginary $100. Like, I can chat up with my phone company like nobody's business. Like, yeah, I'm just gonna pay it on the forehead. You know, like, I have strategies of how I am able to be resilient and make it through on nothing. And I feel like, you know, as full-time employment with benefits and all sorts of things becomes less and less available for people, and they continue to just offer these like part-time contractual, like, minimum wage is ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous. Nobody can live off of that. And I don't know why you think that it's like, you're basically just saying like, I would pay you less, but it's illegal, so I'm not going to pay you less, but I'm going to pay you just enough that I'm not in trouble. Not even that, like, you can take care of yourself in any capacity, right? Like, so I just can't, every time I have that back and forth of like, I should go to school and or get a job with people where I have a boss and a desk and I sit at that desk for 8 hours in the order to be productive, I just, there's a really strong part of me that's like, I'd be horrible at it. And it wouldn't work. Like, I wouldn't provide me with any of the things I need in order actually to stay alive.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, we could continue this conversation at noon. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Amandla. And they are looking at water grabs and the great, you know, topic of everybody in Africa's resources, basically. Grab for Africa's resources. So and we'll be back with Dr. Daryl Horn at 11:30, and then we'll probably be back with you around noon to continue our conversation. And this is Saturday Morning Live on Radio Regent, and we'll be back. Thank you.
Christmas